You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of our best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So in today's episode, I really wanted to talk about the experience of going to a hair salon as a Black woman, specifically going to a Black hair salon, and how regardless of like who you speak to, like when you speak to other women and their experiences of like the Black hair industry or like their experiences of going to get their hair done at Black hair salons, as most Black women tend to do, you will like find that most of them have had like negative experiences. Most of them have had like mostly negative experiences. And a lot of the time, the stories that you share with other women about your experiences, like at the hands of stylists or going to hair salons, is like, if you were to write it down on paper, it sounds like so dramatic. Like the things that you go through almost feel like they should be exceptions to the rule. They should be like uniquely terrible experiences that we have experienced. But actually you realize that that like horrific experience is pretty common, that the level of care, like the dissatisfaction, the interactions with the stylists, the experiences within like the confines of the salon are like really, really terrible, but they're also very common. So that's what I want to talk about in this episode. First, I want to talk about just like what the typical hair experience is or has been for me and people that I know. And then later on, I want to talk about like five reasons why I think like the hair care level, if you will, is often very negative. And actually, I want to narrow it down because I was going to say, I was going to universalize this and say this is just the general experience of going to a Black hair salon, but I'm going to make it more specific and say that it's the general experience of going to a Black hair salon in the West. And I can speak to what the experience has been in European countries. Like I've gone to lots of hair salons in the UK and Ireland and Belgium and France. So I know, you know, those countries pretty intimately. But, you know, when I read stuff online about what happens in other countries in Europe and what happens in other regions like the US, honestly, like this is a pretty common, like well-trodden path by most people. So then moving straight into what the typical experience is. The first thing I will say is whether you book an appointment ahead of time, or whether you walk in and they tell you that they can serve you in like 20 minutes or 15 minutes or 30 minutes, chances are the time that you agree is not going to be honored. If you have an appointment for 9 a.m., as in like you're the first person to be served that day, chances are the stylist won't open the salon until like 9:15, 9:30, and you'll be like calling her trying to like see where she is. And she'll show up and she'll open the salon, which means you'll have to wait for her to set up all her stuff. So if it's a 9 o'clock appointment, like you're probably gonna start at 9:30. And if you walk in the afternoon, for example, and they say they've got like one person ahead of you and they'll be ready to serve you in like 15 minutes, that's probably like gonna be like a 45 minute wait. And whilst you wait and when you walk in initially, they're not going to offer you like water or coffee or tea. And I honestly think that they should, because like Black hair tends to take a longer time to do. So it's not like you're going to be in there for like a little wash and trim and you'll be in and out in an hour or like an hour and 20. You're going to be there for a long time. Like even if you do cane rows, she's going to have to like blow dry your hair. She's going to have to do the cane rows and like put the oil and like spray it down. That's probably going to take like a couple of hours. If you do braids, depending on the length and the thickness of the braids, you could be there for like 8, 9, 10, 11 hours. And then if you get like an intermediary style, like a style that doesn't take as long, like a weave on, even still, you're looking at like 3-4 hours for the complete install and style. So given that you're going to be there for a long time, I do think like they should offer you a drink. So the first experience is chances are late, chances are there's not going to be a lot of hospitality. After this though, you will then talk about the hairstyle that you want to get done. Now, most of the time if you have booked in advance, you probably have exchanged messages with a hairstylist over Instagram or WhatsApp or Facebook or somewhere else. And you've probably sent her like a few pictures of the hairstyle that you want, probably from like the back, the front, the side, just to make sure that she knows what you want done. What's going to happen though when you walk into the hair salon is she won't have a record of that. She won't have those pictures. So you'll probably have to go through the process of explaining again what you want. Which again, it's not the worst, like it's good to confirm. It's just that it's probably done in a way that implies this is the first time you're discussing it. So after you decide what hairstyle you're going to get done and you both agree, Most of the time, like regardless of which hairstyle you are going to be getting or whether you wear your hair natural or relaxed, they'll want to blow dry your hair. So literally like step one for like any hairstyle is like hair drying or blow drying. And the reason why this is not ideal is because one, for people who wear their hair natural, chances are they don't like putting heat on their hair because it's damaging. And even if for people who do like use heat in their hair, the level of heat in the salon is like out of this world. Like it is so hot that you smell like your hair burning. And for me, most of the time when they're blow drying my hair, like they are not using heat protection. So not only are they using like heat on my natural hair, but they're also doing it at a very high temperature and they're also doing it without any heat protection. Sometimes actually I've been in salons where not only are they not using any heat protection, but they're using like grease, like they're using like oil or oils or creams that have a high percentage of oil in them. So when they put a load of that in your hair and then they blow dry your hair at incredibly high temperatures, it's essentially like they're frying your hair. Like they're frying your hair and it smells in the salon like that's exactly what's happening because it is. So now after they've fried your hair, the next step is to start doing your hair. And when they're doing your hair, like most of the time you have to bring your own hair. So for example, if you're getting braids, you're going to have to bring your own extensions for braiding. And then of course, if you're getting like a weave on or weave in, you're going to bring your own hair. I can understand more on the weave on end because people have different like tastes and the kind of hair they want to wear. Whereas with braiding hair, honestly, like most people choose like one of like four colors. So really that should be on hand, even if you have to pay for it extra, or better yet, just include it in the price of the styling. So you'll bring your own hair. Also, sometimes you're expected to bring your own styling creams. Like I went to get my hair done a few weeks ago. Actually, no, it was probably like 3 months ago at this stage. And it was like a place that's like a 20-minute drive from me. And I was sitting in her chair and she asks me, did I bring gel? And I was like, well, no, why would I bring like hair gel to a hair salon to get my hair done? So she then tells me to like go across the street and buy like hair gel. So now I was like, okay, so this is the new standard. Like they don't give you gel at the hair salons. And by the way, this gel was like not cheap. It was like £7 or something. And when it comes to like starting to do your hair, like she will probably open a drawer that is like filthy. Like she'll open a drawer to her left or right. You know, like that little trolley on wheels where you can move it to different stations. She'll open it and you'll see like a billion hairbrushes in there that have like white coating on them or they look dusty. Sometimes they'll have like other people's hair from like the last time that hairbrush was used. And she'll take out like the brush that she wants to use on you and she'll like pull out the hair from the previous clients and like put it on the floor to sweep later. And you'll notice that she won't wash the brushes, she won't sanitize them or spray them with like rubbing alcohol to like clean them. She won't do any of that. She'll go straight from pulling the hair, the old person's hair off, to like putting it in your hair. So you'll be like already disgusted, but you won't feel comfortable to say anything because, you know, you don't want to cause any trouble. When it comes time to like brushing your hair, I always notice they use like the wrong brush. Like I will show up and I've got a lot of hair in my head. My hair is natural and usually it's in a dry condition when I go over there, like my hair is dry. And then they'll whip out like a comb that's just completely like not suitable for the use, for the function. Because if they're going to use like one of those bristle brushes, that's just going to rip through your hair. If they're going to use like a comb without having first detangled, that's going to be damaging to your hair because it's going to be pulling individual strands and snagging them. And it's going to be very painful because again, your hair hasn't been wet and also hasn't been detangled. So the brush chosen will be uncomfortable and will cause you pain if your hair is natural. If your hair is like relaxed, probably not. After that, when she's doing your hair, like outside the brushing and the frying your hair, she'll also insist on using gel. Like, why is it that every hairstyle has to come with like gunks and gunks of gel used? And I'm very picky about the stuff that's in my hair. Like, I tend to use my own hair creams that I make at home. And I really like to know what's in the products I'm putting in my hair because what I've noticed is there's a lot of alcohol in these products that is stripping to my hair. And also, like, there's also stuff in social media about the toxicity levels of like products and products designed for black hair care because of like a lack of regulation. So I'm quite sensitive about the stuff that's put in my hair. So I always prefer not to have gel, but they always insist to use the gel because it's more quote unquote manageable for them. So they use a whole gunk of gel in your hair. And what happens after time with gel as well, if they haven't used like a high quality one or a non-flaking one, is that you'll notice, like, even if you're happy with your style, in a couple of weeks it'll start to flake. You'll see like this white, like dandruff like little flakes on your shoulders and then at the base of your braids or the base of your cane rows, and you'll know that it's from the gel. So I don't like to use the gel, but they often insist that you do. And whilst the hairstylist is doing your hair, one thing you can be sure of is that it's going to be painful, because most of the time they're going to be tugging or pulling too hard, or when they're doing like things like cornrows or cane rows or braids or even like ponytails, they're gonna make the hair way too tight. And again, as I said, the chances are they're going to use like a brush that is inappropriate, or use a brush when fingers should be used, which means it's going to cause pain. And this is, by the way, outside of washing. If, God forbid, you go and get your hair washed, it's gonna be incredibly, incredibly aggressive. Like the last time I got my hair done, not the last place that I got 3 months, but the time before then, I went to get my hair done. Like I took my braids out and I wanted to just wash and dry it in the hair salon. This woman was tugging and pulling at my hair so much. Like I felt like my head was bouncing around in that sink. And it culminated in her pulling so hard at my ear that part of my ear, like the earring, ripped a bit of my skin and I started to bleed profusely. And I had to like literally clutch my ear and put my head in my lap because I was in so much pain. And she just looked like completely frazzled, like, oh, I don't know why you're bleeding. And I, even as I was bleeding, I could feel like she didn't have empathy for what she had just done. I could feel she was just kind of like, yeah, so should we kind of like keep going? So anyway, point is, like, it'll be painful, even if it doesn't take you to the point of like your ear bleeding or like her scratching your scalp or her pulling out tufts of hair. It's not going to be a relaxing, comfortable experience most of the time. Now, during the appointment, there are also other things that are going to take place. Like, chances are she's going to take a phone call. Like, she's going to have one hand in your hair while she answers the phone with the other hand. She's probably going to talk like way too long on that phone call. And if she doesn't like have like a one-off long call or call that takes like too long, she'll like sometimes receive like multiple short calls where it feels like maybe it's a child that's calling her or it's a colleague that's calling her, but they don't go through the whole rigmarole of being like, hey, how are you, each time. Like, she'll just pick up and start speaking, to the point where at times, because you don't know that she's on the phone again, you might mistakenly think that she's talking to you. So she'll have like either one long phone call or she'll have like multiple short phone calls where it's just like, yeah, 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 and then hangs up. She'll probably also be playing like her own music. It won't be you know, when you go to the shops, when you go to like shopping or when you go to a mall or when you go to even the supermarket or the grocery store, they'll have like music sometimes playing in the background, and it's music designed to be like kind of neutral background, light, pleasant music where you can still have a conversation, can still hear yourself think, and it isn't anything controversial, and often it isn't with lyrics. And if it is with lyrics, it's like all songs that could be played on the radio during daytime, so it's pretty safe music. In this hair salon, the hair salons, it'll go one of two ways in my experience. Either it'll be like gospel music being played just a little bit too loud, to the point where it's gonna give you a headache because it's playing for like hours. If you're getting your braids done and you're somebody like me who has a lot of hair, you might be there for 8-9 hours listening to gospel music. And I like gospel music, I just don't know if I want to listen to it for like 8-9 hours at like too high a level. If it isn't gospel music, and if the woman isn't religious, it'll probably be like very sexual R&B songs. I remember like a few months ago, I went to like this hair salon, which is dead to me, which I will never go to again. And the woman, this was like at like the 9 a.m. appointment that actually started at 9:30. She was playing the most sexual, vulgar R&B music I have ever heard. And I know already I'm a bit of a prude, so maybe I'm just not used to hearing like stuff like that. But when I say it was the most explicit, vulgar, sexual content to listen to for like hours on end, it honestly was. I was so uncomfortable. So chances are you're going to be listening to music that isn't to your taste, or even if it is to your taste, it's going to be a little bit too loud and played for way too long. Now, in the background of all that going on, of the music going on, the phone calls going on, she's probably also going to be engaging in conversation with her colleagues. They'll probably gossip about people who don't go to church, or gossip about like people's husbands or people's relationships. Or if it isn't in a gossipy way, they'll just be having like genuine conversation, except that the conversation will be taking over like taking place over your head, and they'll be talking to each other as though like you're not there and you're not a customer, and as though you don't exist, and they'll like reveal intimate information that you probably shouldn't be privy to. And then whilst all of this is going on at various times during your appointment, chances are like their friends or like their like other aunties, like African aunties, Black aunties, are going to walk in and they're going to have a chat with your hairstylist, like happy, like cheerful conversation about how they haven't seen each other in a while, where have you been, how's your family, how's your kids. And again, all of this is fine except for the fact that they're not giving you any care or attention, and they're not including you in the conversation. And also these side conversations taking place are kind of distracting her from like what you're paying her to do, which is doing your hair. Other things that will take place during your appointment is at some point she's going to get hungry because she's been doing your hair for like a few hours at this stage, or a couple of hours, and it's probably lunchtime. So, you know, she'll say, I'll be right back, and she'll disappear for like 15 minutes while she goes and gets like food. And at no point will she offer you food or offer to get you food or suggest that you go and get lunch as well. You go and take a break to get food for yourself. She'll just go and get her lunch and come back, and she'll start eating either right beside you, which in my culture is like super rude if you haven't offered food to somebody. So she'll either eat like right next to you, or she'll go into the kitchen and like she'll eat for a little bit and then come and finish off the food like by your side. And one of the things that I always notice that like makes me sick to my stomach is they won't wash their hands. So most of the time when they get like chicken and chips from across the way, from across the street, chances are they're eating the chicken drumsticks and the chips or the fries with their hands. And so they're using their hands. They finish eating. They might give it a little wipe down with like the napkins that come with like the food, but then they don't go to the bathroom and like wash their hands with soap and then come back. It'll often go straight from eating to like them doing your hair, to them using the same hand they're eating that fried chicken with to do your hair. So again, like one of the things that gives me the like a massive ick. Other things to expect during the appointment is that at various times, like other people who aren't her friends, like other customers will walk in and they will ask about prices or they'll ask about hairstyles. And she'll always say that she can do whatever they're asking for. And she'll always say that she's got availability. What she tends to do is she'll say something like, yeah, sure, just take a seat and I'll be right with you. And what she will do is that she will leave you. So she will stop doing your hair temporarily. And after she's kept the new people waiting for like a few minutes, she's probably worried they're going to leave and she's not going to be able to like make money from those additional customers. So what she'll do is that halfway through doing your hair, she'll stop doing your hair for a bit. She'll go over and call the new people to sit down. She'll start doing their hair up to a certain level, like a certain level where they can't now leave the salon because now their hair would be half done if they left in that state. So she'll go and like maybe she'll undo a few braids, or maybe she'll like wash it and have them sit there, or maybe she will like start doing like a cane row, and then she'll say, you know, just sit here, let me just finish who I was doing, and then she'll come back to you and continue doing your hair. And she'll do that with a couple of other people, and the other stylists will also do that with a couple of other people, so that at any given time there's like multiple people whose hair is like partway through being done. And the idea again is to prevent those people from leaving, because you're not going to leave with like your hair only washed and not blow dried and styled, or you're not going to leave if you have like just like one cane row in your hair. Another thing they will do is that when it's like towards the end of your appointment, or you have to go under a dryer for another reason because it's part of the styling process, like they will leave you on there for like way too long. Like maybe the instructions are supposed to be that you're there for like 20 minutes. They sit you under the dryer for 20 minutes for the hair products to work. What will actually happen is they'll leave you there for like 40 minutes, 50 minutes, sometimes even an hour. Not because your hair takes that long to process or because the process requires you to sit under the dryer for that long. It's that they essentially use like the hair, that they essentially use you sitting under the hair dryer as an opportunity to do other people's hair. So the people that they've kept waiting whilst they went back to doing your hair, or the new walk-ins that come in looking for like styling services as well, that's the time where you're under the dryer that they use to like see to those people. And then a final thing that you will experience at the salon, like whether it's the salon is like in her home or it is in like a salon, chances are you're going to be cold because most of the time the heating is not on and there aren't like blankets provided. And it's okay in the summer months because obviously it's generally warmer, but in the winter, especially because salons tend to have like marbly type floors or like, you know, like those cold hard floors, chances are you're going to feel the cold extra, like a little bit extra than you would if it was like carpeted or if you were in another setting. Now, outside of like the explicit things that happen to you in the hair salon, you know, the things that the salon owner or hairstylist does or says, or how they interact with you or how they interact with other people, outside of that, you'll also like observe certain things. Like you observe certain psychological things that you take in or things that you take in mentally. One of those things is that you'll notice that the pictures on the walls don't tend to reflect the average clientele in the store. So most of the time, they'll have like a very light-skinned black person on the wall. It'll be somebody like Rihanna or Beyonce, but not like Rihanna and Beyonce when they're like darker or tanned or just like in the summer months or just like their average color throughout the year. It'll be like the most whitewashed version of Rihanna or Beyonce. If it isn't Rihanna or Beyonce, it'll be like another like super, super light-skinned person, like very light-skinned person that again isn't probably representative of the average person that comes to the hair salon. And then in other places, and this is true of like my most local place, they'll have like white women on the wall. Like I remember I went to get my hair done at this black hair salon, and black hair salon tend to cater, as you probably know, exclusively to black hair or African people or black people. And this place had like lots of framed, like huge sizes of Audrey Hepburn. It was like loads of pictures of Audrey Hepburn. I've been to other places where they've had pictures of like Marilyn Monroe or other pictures of just like white, like female, like icons. And it's not that I don't think those women are beautiful. Of course, they're beautiful. They're icons for a reason. But in the context of going to a black hair salon where all the clientele are going to be black or biracial, the hairstylist is going to be a black woman or a biracial woman. Literally everybody in that dynamic is going to be black or black biracial. It's definitely odd to have like pictures, like the representatives or the representation of beauty in those places to be of white women is very bizarre. Or if it isn't white women, it's going to be of incredibly light-skinned women. And I can tell you for a fact that there's a Venn diagram that where there's an intersection between the women who own salons, who put like white versions of Rihanna and Beyonce on their walls or white women on their walls, and the chances that they are wearing either like a blonde, badly fitting weave or wig, or engage in skin lightening or skin bleaching. Like those two things tend to go together, at least in like the places that I've been. Like I can almost call it, like if I even before I see the stylist, if I see pictures on the walls that are of what I just described, I can almost predict how the hairstylist is going to look. And also, as I'll talk about later, I can also predict how they're going to interact with me. Now, outside what I just described earlier about the beginning stages of getting your hair done and you arriving and starting the appointment, and then the things that happen during your appointment, and then the things that you observe during your appointment, outside that, it'll then finally be time to charge you for whatever style that they have done for you or whatever services they have provided to you that day. And one thing that tends to happen is that they'll try and overcharge you, or they'll try and charge you more than you had initially agreed. So either they'll say like they've had to blow dry your hair when they hadn't expected to have to, and that's taking more time, so they have to charge you more. Or they'll say that you asked for braids that were thinner or longer than they had anticipated or planned for, and so that took longer, and so they want to charge you more. Or they'll say that you ran late, or the appointment itself has run late because of all the delays that I spoke about earlier. So in other words, it took longer than they expected, and so they're trying to charge you for the extra time they've given. Or they'll say that the style that you had initially agreed on has been altered in some way. And this could be like for the most minuscule of reasons. This could be because they left out a little bit more hair so that you could slick down your edges. It could be because you asked for an extra cane roll. It could be like for any trivial reason, but they'll say if you made any alterations to the style that you initially agreed upon, they'll try and charge you more. They might also charge you more, which I've had many times. They'll charge you more for having your hair natural. So they expect your hair to be chemically altered in some way, like relaxed, for example, or if it isn't chemically processed or altered, they expect you to have your hair straightened or blow dried straight. And so when you show up in your way that like God made you, the way that you naturally are, they'll charge you because they consider that to be more work and because they didn't anticipate you like showing up the way you naturally are. Another reason they might try and charge you more is if your hair was too long or longer than they expected, or like me, if your hair was like quote unquote too thick. Because again, if they expect the standard to be that people's hair has been at least blow dried straight or chemically straightened or altered in some way, then anything outside that to them is like too thick. So again, like most of the time, there's like a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth because they try to pressure you into paying more than you had agreed. And sometimes it's not that much. It might just be like an extra 10 pounds or an extra 20 pounds. But when you had budgeted for something and somebody tries to charge you more than you had agreed, you automatically are going to feel like exploited or taken advantage of. So it's very unlikely that you pay just like the price you agreed. Like if you agreed £100 or $100 or two, whatever it is, chances are you're going to pay a little bit more. And then when it comes time to actually paying, like most of the time, they're not going to have a card machine. So you're either going to have to pay by bank transfer. And sometimes, by the way, the name on the account doesn't even match a stylist's name. So you're probably paying somebody who like you can't trace down, like there's no way of you keeping a record of where your money went. And if it isn't you transferring, like doing a direct bank transfer, sometimes they ask you to go and get cash out or to bring cash with you or to pay through like some kind of cash app or app like Revolut where you can transfer funds using a mobile phone number. But either way, the various ways in which they offer you to pay essentially offer you very little protection as a consumer, because when you pay by bank transfer, when you pay by card, by like a debit card or a credit card, you've got a record of the transaction, and sometimes you can dispute the charge if there's an issue, or even if you have to take like other measures to try and get your money back, it's often a lot easier trying to get your money back when you've paid with plastic versus when you've made like a direct bank transfer. And then, like, you know, speaking of paying and sometimes having to get your money back, if you should pay for like a service, let's say you got your braids done and you got like medium or small size braids, and you get home and you're admiring your hair, you're looking at your hair, you're inspecting your hair, and then you like happen to see the back of your head and you'll see that at the back they made like massive braids. Like at the front, they did the small, medium ones that you asked for, but because you can't see the back, they basically took advantage and made them extra big because they knew you couldn't see them. And so now, like, you're not happy with your hair because of what they've done to the back of your hair, but because you've paid through bank transfer, or sometimes you've paid through like an app like Cash App or Revolut, or sometimes you've given them cash, like the chances of you as a customer like being able to like complain and get your money back is like literally next to zero. So you basically just hold that L and decide to go somewhere else in the future, or decide to inspect the hair before you leave the salon next time. But either way, no matter how you slice and dice it, most of the time you tend to leave the hair salon like tired, annoyed. Sometimes you leave with a style that you wanted. Sometimes you don't leave with the style that you wanted. And even if you did get the style that you needed, because of all these different negative experiences throughout your appointment, you're not going to leave there in a good mood. You're not going to leave there feeling like energized and relaxed because you've spent like hours engaged in self-care. Most of the time, you're mentally exhausted from all like the mind-bending and the aggression or the microaggressions that you're experiencing at the hands of the hairstylist. And also just sometimes as well, it's not even in comfortable environments. And a lot of the time, actually, it's not even in a like an easy to get to part of town. So you're probably going to have to commute like a while to get home anyway. And the net effect is, sure, you got your hair done and you don't have to see them for another month and a half or 2 months or however long you keep your hairstyle in, but you don't leave happy. You don't leave content. You don't leave satisfied. You don't leave excited for the next time you have to go to get your hair done at this place. So I've given like an overview of what I feel is like representative of the average experience of going to a hairstylist, to a black hairstylist to get your hair done. At least that's been my experience in getting my hair done in the UK. And it's also been the experiences of like friends and family where we sort of exchange horror stories of all the things that happen to us in these places. And honestly, like I said at the top of the episode, like this is a nigh on like universal experience. I have yet to meet a single black woman who can say like, oh, I love going to the hair salon. Like, I find it so relaxing. I always get what I want. I love the pleasant interaction with a stylist. I love the happy environment in which I get my hair done. Like, most of the time, that's just not the case. Now, having discussed, you know, all the things that happen when you're there, I want to talk about, like, the reasons why I personally feel this is, like, the general hair culture or the general hair culture in Black salons. And I think there, like, broadly speaking, there's, like, five core issues when I was reflecting on this, why I think that is. The first is clearly, like, there's a lack of regulation. So when you walk into most salons, like, you will rarely see any certificates on the wall the way you would expect to see when you go to get other beauty treatments. So for example, like, if you go to, like, a reputable waxing place or a massage place or a facial place or, like, any other place where beauty treatments are taking place, like, they tend to have, like, certification. That's why you feel so comfortable. That's why the place is, like, nice. That's why there's, like, a level of professionalism. It's because they are under some form of regulation that requires, like, a standard level of care towards customers. And most of the time in the Black hair industry and, like, in places where I've experienced them, there tends to be very little regulation. And so that means that customers don't have recourse when things go wrong. But it also means that, like, I feel some of the treatments aren't even being administered in a safe way. So a lot of people have experienced, for example, traction alopecia, where because braids are done consistently too tight or cane rows are done consistently too tight, it results in the person losing hair, sometimes on a permanent or semi-permanent basis, losing hair at the places where that hair is consistently tugged and pulled. Often it tends to be at the front of the hairline, like the edges, if you will, because that's where the hairs are the shortest, and that's where the stylists tend to pull and tug and, like, make as tight as possible because they're trying to capture every last hair. So again, the lack of regulation means that people end up suffering from medical conditions like traction alopecia or other forms of hair loss. Or if they get their hair relaxed, like, people experience bleeding because they keep the products on, one, like, way too long. You're actually only supposed to keep the relaxer on for, like, 20-25 minutes. Second, it's like hydrogen peroxide when you get your hair done. Like, when you get your hair bleached, the bleach is never supposed to touch your scalp because it's toxic and it's dangerous for your skin, for your scalp. And so that's why when hairstylists apply bleach, they have to apply the bleach, like, a little bit, like, off the shaft of your hair, like, off, certainly off your scalp, because if it makes contact with your scalp, it's going to burn you and it's going to cause damage. That's the same thing with, like, relaxers and other chemical hair straighteners. But one thing you'll notice is that they do apply that to the scalp. They apply it to the scalp, and on top of that, they keep it on there for an incredibly long time because they believe that the longer that you keep it on your hair, the more, like, straight your hair is going to be. And also because sometimes they're dealing with other customers, and so they just let you sit there for ages while your hair is, like, being processed and the chemicals are sitting on your scalp. And so what happens often when they wash it out, you'll notice that, like, it's tender and sensitive. And after a few days, you can notice that there are scabs in your hair. So those scabs that formed because the hair has been burned, like, the scalp has been burned, and it's basically forming a scab as a healing mechanism. And so that's how you know that you were bleeding or that you were burned because of those scabs. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. Also, because of, like, sometimes, like, a lack of regulation, it can result in, like, lack of hygiene standards. Like, when I described the incidents of, like, them opening a drawer and there's, like, all these filthy brushes that they're going to, like, go straight to using on you without cleaning. Because of the lack of hygiene sometimes that comes from, like, a lack of regulation, like, people can get infections because they're essentially having, like, unclean utensils and unclean conditions, like, whilst they're getting their hair done. And don't forget, like, your scalp is still your skin. And especially if there's going to be, like, cuts and bruises and, like, bleedings that comes from the other stuff they're doing. And then on top of that, they're not using hygienic utensils. Like, that's a recipe for bacteria, and that's a recipe for you, like, getting sick or damaging the skin on your scalp in some way. So the lack of regulation is at the core of a lot of the bigger issues around, like, just the safety in treatment, and then also in terms of, like, the recourse to customers, like, customers having a place to go and complain about things. Because if there was regulators or there was regulation, it could mean that you can go and complain. So when things go wrong or when there is poor treatment or unsafe treatment, or you experience, like, traction alopecia or other health issues that result from the way that you receive the treatment at the salon, you can go and complain. And often regulators have like powers behind them. So they might be able to either carry out an investigation to see how the salon like practices in general, like whether they have adequate like hygiene levels, adequate safety levels, where there's adequate training for their staff. So regulators tend to have that power to enforce like training and to investigate things. And also regulators tend to have the power to like shut companies down, to shut salons down. Or if they don't shut them down, they often have the power to like fine them for poor treatment or for low standards. And so again, like the lack of regulation means that customers aren't protected. And it also means that these hair salons get away with like doing kind of like really bad things because there, again, is no recourse. There's no regulator enforcing minimum standards for people. And by the way, sometimes it isn't even because like people like stylists or hair salon owners are being malicious or unkind or thoughtless. Sometimes it's because they literally don't know any better. Like if they haven't undergone that training, if there isn't that regulation or if there isn't a regulator or a set of standards under which they need to abide by, especially in places like the UK, I know the US it's a lot in the US it's a lot more sophisticated in terms of like regulation, but in the UK it's like next to nothing. It's like there's very little enforcement when it comes to like the black hair industry. And because there's little enforcement, it also means there's little information for hair salon owners and stylists to essentially take in and make adaptations as necessary. The second reason I feel for the poor sort of environment of hair salons and the poor treatment we receive is also because there's a general lack of supportive infrastructure. And by that I mean, we don't just need like regulation or a regulator that enforces like rules and regulations. We also need like supportive infrastructure, like training schools, like beauty schools, like schools where people can go and they can learn things like how to do hair safely, how to do hair well, how to like prioritize customer care, how to run businesses and the dimensions within that, like how to take payments, how to make sure you're insured, how to make sure you're paying the taxes, like the business of having a beauty business. Because there isn't that supportive infrastructure, there isn't that ancillary sort of like training schools or training centers or beauty schools or beauty colleges, it means again, there is no like unified standard of care. There's no unified way or minimum standards when it comes to how salon owners should treat their clients and staff and the level of care that customers can expect to receive in these places. So the lack of supportive infrastructure also just means that people just aren't being trained to the same level or to an adequate level. The third reason is that I observe that clearly the black hair industry suffers from chronic underinvestment. So a lot of people don't have access to the capital that they need, because most of the time when people don't do things, it isn't because they don't know that there's a better way to do it. Sometimes it's because they don't have the means to do so. So a lot of like when you compare, for example, like European hairstylists or hair salons, one of the things that you'll notice is that they clearly have more money. They have more money to start up their business. So like for like black salons are only starting out with a fraction of the amount of money they need to run their businesses as compared to like their European or white counterparts, which means that they're not going to be able to have salons in like nicer part of towns. It means even when they have salons, it's not going to be the right size for them. They're not going to be able to afford all the proper equipment. They're not going to be able to have the adequate levels of staff. They're not going to be able to have enough money to pay like high level staff. Like the lack of access to capital or money has all these knock-on effects in terms of the way in which the services are conducted and the level of care that customers receive, as well as the general environment under which the salon operates. So lack of underinvestment, I feel like, is also like a key driver in all of this, because if you are like a one man or one woman shop trying to do everything because you don't have the money to hire people, of course it's going to go wrong. Or if you don't have like somebody doing the admin or somebody doing like the legal side of things, you're going to have all these issues because you're trying to do everything. Like you can't be like, usually in businesses, there's a segregation of responsibilities. Typically, if you run like a restaurant, it's not as though the owner is going to be the person who like cleans the restaurant, sets up the tables, cooks the food, brings the food to the tables, does the cleaning afterwards, looks after the insurance, looks after the customer complaints, orders the food, takes out the trash, makes sure that all the different components of the restaurant, like, they're not doing that alone. They have a whole body of people and supportive infrastructure around them, and they only look after a segment of that business. They usually look after, like, the big picture of things, and then they have, like, managers and assistant managers and other members of staff to look after the different components. Clearly, that's not what's happening within the black hair industry. You don't have that supportive infrastructure environment. And most of it is because people don't have access to, like, startup capital. And by that, I mean, they aren't able to get loans to start their businesses. They don't have as much, like, equity, like, as much, like, startup money that they have saved themselves, or they aren't able to, like, borrow money from friends and family. Like, sometimes you take it for granted that if you are somebody who's, like, first generation or even, like, second generation, or you're part of the diaspora and you don't have, like roots in the country, or you don't have, like, family members that are established and make, like, good money, it has a knock-on effect on you, because when it comes time to, like, starting a business, you can't do, like, the family and friends rounds, which many businesses tend to do at the beginning cycle or the beginning of their businesses. They tend to get money from their friends and family. And it could be, like, decent amounts of money, like, in the same way that, like, people buying their first homes in the UK, for example, tend to get family support. Their family tends to give them, like, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 pounds to start their home, to start them off on the property ladder. It's the same with businesses. Like, a lot of people start their businesses because they're able to get money from friends and family. And the thing about the black hair industry is that often, because they're immigrants, because they're first generation, or even if they're not first generation, they're only second generation, they don't have generational wealth within their communities. And so they don't have access to, like, informal forms of capital. They're not able to, like, borrow, like, significant sums of money from their friends and families. And because they're not able to borrow money from their friends and families, that has a knock-on effect on the kind of salon that they can have, the kind of equipment they can have in those salons, the kind of staff they can hire. All those things are interconnected. The fourth reason I feel like the level of care is so low and the experiences in hair salons and black hair salons tend to be negative is also because the hairstylists, like, themselves and the hair salon owners themselves are essentially operating in a very hostile environment. And in their day-to-day experiences and in their personal lives, they're probably experiencing, like, multiple microaggressions or instances of micro-racism on a daily basis. And what happens when you experience, like, that level of just constant, incessant, inescapable aggression from the environment that you're operating in is that, one, it leads to a lot of internalized anxiety. It also leads to higher levels of stress, of course. It also has a psychological impact in that you're always on defense mode. You're always, like, somebody's always, like, giving you a dirty look or interacting you in a way that's negative or disrespectful or treating you worse than the next person because they are a racist person. All that has the net effect of wearing you down, wearing your spirit down, wearing your energy down, wearing your positivity down, and making you increasingly frustrated. And what happens when you experience that for a prolonged period of time, and it happens to you all the time, is that you end up taking out your frustrations on people who don't have the capacity to hurt you. Or in other words, you take out that frustration or that anger or that negative experience on people like you, because people like you are less likely to have power over you, right? So what happens is you go on the bus and the bus driver gives you a dirty look, or the bus driver even was about to, like, drive off without you. Or you go to sit down and you see that the white person doesn't want you to sit next to them. Or you sit down and they move somewhere else. Or they, like scrunch up closer to themselves as though they don't want you to touch them. Or you go into a restaurant and you just notice that just a low level of like disrespect, or there isn't the same warmth they're shown to other people, or like they make comments about you thinking that you can't hear, or they make comments about your hair, or you're watching TV and there'll be like a random instances of racism without any trigger warning, or you go to school and you experience microaggressions from your teachers or from your university professors, or you're reading content that's incredibly whitewashed and colonial, or in general is very anti-Black, or you take in advertisements that are anti-Black and have like just negative stereotyping of Black people, or you turn on the news and you see like Black people being represented in a way that implies they're uniquely dangerous or hostile or like criminal, you're taking in all this negative information, all this negative content, all these personal negative interactions that you're experiencing with the people that you interact with on a daily basis. And again, you don't take it out on them because they have the social power and they have sometimes like just power over you in terms of it being like people who could ruin your life or make your life more difficult. And so you don't express that anger or frustration to them. You go and you express it to other Black people. You express it to your family members or the people that you love or the people who are closest to you. But in the context of the conversation we're having now about the hair salon experience, you also take it out on your Black customers, because you know that those Black customers aren't going to do anything to you. Like it's a safe way to like offload that negative emotion essentially. And so again, like it's very unlikely that these stylists are going to be catching hell out there and then be able to like bring like sweetness and tenderness and conscientiousness to like their salon or to the salon or to how they interact with you. I read this interesting study about an interesting study that was conducted where they followed a whole bunch of like Black teenagers around Washington, D.C. And they followed them with the aim of seeing what their experiences with microaggressions were. So they wanted to see if they experienced microaggressions and if they did experience them, like to what extent, to what degree, and how often. So what they found was that over the course of 2 weeks, like on average, each Black child or each Black teenager experienced up to 70 individual microaggressions. And that worked out roughly as 5 instances every single day where they experienced some level of low-level racism. I suspect that it's also the case for like adults, obviously, who tend to come in contact with like more people because their worlds are bigger. It isn't just school and their hobbies and their friends. They're also interacting with just like a bigger world. And so the instances of like microaggressions and racism are going to be higher. And so again, like with the hairstylists, they're not going to be catching hell out there and be able to bring the love and gentleness and care into the salon. Because again, like that level of like horribleness has to find like some level of self-expression, and often that self-expression, that expression comes out in the most safe environment, and that tends to be in a Black space, i.e. the hair salon. And also, by the way, truth be told, it isn't just the hairstylists that are experiencing like this racism out there. It isn't just them that are experiencing these microaggressions out there in the real world. Chances are you also are not walking in with like lightness and airiness and happiness and joy and love to that Black space. You're also operating in a hostile environment as a Black person. And so chances are when you enter the salon or when you interact with these hairstylists, you also are probably bringing a level of energy that isn't necessarily all loving or isn't necessarily all positive and all happy. And so you're both interacting on that sort of negative sphere, that low vibrational sphere, because you're both people who are experiencing this hostile environment and you're coming together and the net effect isn't positive. Essentially, it's very difficult for it to be positive when people aren't conscious of like the energy and the mental space or the psyche they're bringing to interactions with people. And that brings me on to my final point of why I think we have such negative experiences in Black hair salons and why our interactions with Black hairstylists are often plagued with sort of like these traumatic experiences and dramatic stories that I've described in this episode. I think another core reason is self-hatred. So I've just described in the last point about how they are operating in a negative environment, in a hostile environment, and how that leads to taking out your frustrations on your Black customers. But another effect of operating in a racist environment as like Black people who live in the West for whatever reason is that like you tend to internalize the hate you experience outside inward, like you reflect that inward. And it's a pretty well-established idea that when people experience hostility, you would think that the natural inclination is for them to sort of like fight back and like tell the people who are making them uncomfortable or unhappy or miserable in some way to like go screw or to like retaliate or to in another way sort of assert the fact that they're wrong, they're doing something wrong. That's not actually what happens. Like when people experience prolonged instances of negative interaction because of immutable characteristics like their racial identity, for example, they direct that hatred inward. So think even of like people who are bullied in school, like primary school or high school or in other places in their lives. A lot of the time it results with the person who was bullied having low self-esteem, because what they have done is that they've internalized the messaging from the bullies, who are kids who are bad kids, unkind kids doing bad things. They don't look at those kids and see them through that lens, like these kids are bad, these kids are unkind, these kids are trying to assert their dominance by being evil to me. That's not the message they take in. They take in the message that I deserve that. Like the reason why I get picked on is because I'm a loser. The reason because I get picked on is because I'm not like everybody else. There is something freakish about me. There is something weird about me. So you direct that hatred you're experiencing from these other kids, from these bullies, you direct it inward. Or even when you think about the way in which women internalize sexism, like they don't take in all this misogynistic messaging from the outside world and think, well, the reason why the world is the way it is because men have defined themselves through the words of greatness, like everything they do is great, and then they've pathologized everything that is female or feminine, and that's why you don't see women represented in these organizations. You don't see women as like the head of NASA. You don't see women as like the head of the military. You don't see women as like the head of important banks. You see them so infrequently because of misogyny. That's not the message that women tend to take in. They tend to take in the message that men are better, men are more intelligent, men are more capable, men are more strategic, men are more likely to be good at STEM subjects, men are more capable or strong or powerful, or in all these ways, like they direct their hatred inwards. They say, I'm weaker, I'm not as smart, I'm not as capable. So again, like they internalize that hatred. It's also the same thing when people experience racism. It isn't that they, like, unless they're being conscious about it and they're on a journey of healing and understanding like what's going on, most of the time they don't take in the hatred as like, those people suffer from like a mental disorder that makes them believe that they are better because they've got white skin. They don't look at it that way. They tend to point the hatred inward. They tend to have self-limiting beliefs about themselves. Like, well, they like things like white hair is better and therefore I should wear white hair. I should wear hair that mimics that texture because their hair is better. Or white women are more beautiful and that's why they should be on my walls in my Black hair salon. Or insert whatever thoughts that people have. They tend to direct the racism they experience, whether it's big racism, micro racism, they tend to internalize that messaging and direct that hatred towards the self. And how that manifests in hair salons is things like I've described elsewhere in the episode, where the women, like the hairstylists, are hostile to us. You know, they act as though we're not paying their bills. They act as though we're not the people who are responsible for them being able to like live life comfortably. It's because we're giving them our money, and yet they're being hostile to us because they essentially don't see us as a welcome presence, even in their midst, because on a daily basis, they're treated as though they're not a welcome presence in their countries, you know? So they kind of direct that hatred to their Black customers. Another thing that shows you that they have a level of internalized hatred is the level of aggression that they use with our hair. So even though Black hair is the most fragile hair because it's curly, coily, which means that the oils don't go from like the base of the hair all the way to the tip. It can't make its way all the way down because of like the degree to which the hair coils. It means that the hair is subject to be drier. And that's why you need to use like like creams to add that oil that can't go down the shaft. And because our hair is more fragile, because it's more prone to being to drying out, it's weird that they exert that level of aggression when they're combing our hair or washing our hair or like blow drying our hair, because it should be the hair that is treated with the most gentleness, with like gentle hands, with like soft brushes, because it's very vulnerable to breaking and snagging. So again, that level of aggression, like what I described to the woman is like making my hair bounce in the hair sink because she's being so rough with me. I think it's very difficult to be tender with people who remind you of yourself when you don't like yourself or when you have internalized racism towards yourself. Another thing that demonstrates for me the internalized racism is the things that I described about like how the salon is presented, like being in a black hair salon with all white women on the walls or very, very light skinned women on the walls is a key giveaway, especially when the women who are doing the hair have like skin bleached, they have their skin bleached, or sometimes they've got contact in, or sometimes they're wearing like wigs that are just clearly not representative of their own hair types in a way that reminds you, like, you almost feel like they would rather be doing white hair. They would rather you be like a white customer and they were doing like hair for a white customer. Another way you can tell that they've got internalized racism towards like their blackness or they've got anti-black feelings is how they interact with black hair, like natural black hair. Because even like my partner made a joke the other day about how we often refer to like black people's hair who don't relax their hair or don't chemically straighten their hair as like natural hair. But even natural hair is like a weird thing to say. It's just your hair. That's just your hair. If anything, the differentiating term should be straightened hair or chemically processed hair, because that's the thing where you have had to do something. Like that's the thing that's a deviation from what's normal or typical or expected. So the fact that we always have to use the term natural hair to describe just your hair, the way it grows out of your head, even that is an indication that there's a high level of people processing their hair to the point where your natural hair, the way you are naturally, is like isn't the default. It's like the thing that needs to be highlighted as being different. So again, in the context of like the hair salon experience, the anti-blackness comes in when they are trying to charge you more money because your hair is natural, because it's a black hair salon. Like the standard is that your hair is in its natural state because that's how everybody is born. That's how everybody is outside processing their hair. And so why should you have to pay more because your hair is natural? Why should they insist on blow drying your hair and damaging your hair with heat when the natural state for black hair is to be in its afro state or afro-like state or curly coily state, or other things like punishing you or charging you more because your hair is thick? But that's again like the natural or normal state or the typical state for people with African hair or afro type hair or afro textured hair. Again, the constant penalization and aggressive interaction with like our natural hair, the way it grows out of our head, again points to the fact that the stylists themselves have some level of like hair dysphoria, if that's a word. Like they've got a discomfort around blackness and black hair and afro textured hair, and that's why they either try and punish it by taming it and constraining it and by being aggressive with it, or by essentially like charging you more for it. And actually, the final point I will say about this is I also think it's reflected in the hairstyles that they push or the hairstyles that they tend to have themselves. And so there, for me, like there's absolutely nothing wrong with having hair extensions. Like I use extensions in my braids, and I don't even think there's anything wrong with getting like weaves that are straight, like straight textured, like it looks like the hair has been straightened. What I do think though sometimes is when people only ever have these styles, to me it implies that they've got some sense of dysphoria about their own hair, some sense of discomfort around their own texture. Otherwise, you would expect to see like a diversity in the way in which the hair is presented. And sometimes we become like blind to how curious or odd it looks that we have like a texture of hair that isn't our own, and that we wear that so often, and we wear that sometimes even exclusively, we forget that it's kind of odd or curious or looks funny because we're so used to seeing it. And so a useful exercise is if you close your eyes and you imagine like a white woman, your average white woman, and you imagine her like going to a party or going to a restaurant with her friends or going to work or going to church or running errands around the store or going shopping. And throughout all these different images I've described that you're imagining, imagine that on her, that her hairstyle is an afro. It's a dark brown to black, like fluffy, long, big, high, full afro, curly, coily. And as she's going through her life and she's going for interviews and she's going for jobs and she's like buying coffee, she's got this big fro, this big, beautiful, fluffy, like thick, soft, billowy afro. Now, if you think that that image is weird or odd or there's something curious about it, realize that that's the same way that like black women who have like European textured hair on their head all the time look. Like that's, it's the same, it's literally the same equivalent. So the problem isn't the extension or the thing that signifies that something might be wrong or might be off. Or there might be some level of internalized anti-blackness or internalized dysphoria around Afro-textured hair, is the fact that the extensions are always European textured. It's not even like extensions that reflect the way that Afro hair would look if it was straightened or relaxed. It's that it's literally, if not European hair, it'll be like Asian textured hair or Latin American textured hair. And again, like the equivalent, the same equivalent is of the white woman wearing an afro that I just described. That's what it looks like in the eyes of other people. And that's what it looks like when you're not used to sort of seeing it. It's kind of like jarring. And I bring this all up not to like hair shame people, but to say that sometimes like the actions we take actually reinforce our own feelings of inadequacy or dysphoria. So if you live in a hostile environment where you're experiencing microaggressions and you're taking lots of anti-black feelings, you are going to make choices that try and assuage that dysphoria. You're going to make decisions that try and cope with that dysphoria. One of the ways that people try to feel beautiful is by erasing some of their blackness, and sometimes that is manifest in the hair types that they choose or in the hairstyles or the hair textures that they opt for. And sometimes that has a negative effect on our psyche or psychologically, because each time you interact with hair in that way, each time you put on hair that isn't reflective of like how you naturally are or how other black people's hair grows, it's kind of communicating to your psyche that you think that that hair is superior or that hair is more acceptable or that hair is more beautiful. And it has a knock-on effect in your confidence, because you're not going to feel sexy or beautiful if you have your own hair out. If you have your own natural hair out, you're going to feel like something is wrong. You're going to feel naked. You're going to feel exposed. And that is coming from like repeating that experience of only using one type of hair that doesn't reflect your own. And so with that, I'm going to wrap up this week's episode before I waffle even more. Thank you so much for listening to the very end. I hope you were able to find some value in it. I hope you enjoyed some of the comments that I brought up in this episode. If you did, I would really appreciate it if you left me a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts from. It's just very helpful in coming up in the algorithm. With that, I'll catch you next Monday. Have a great week, and looking forward to the next episode.